חיים לחיים. Mendel Putova said, I'm going to bring in, so I'm going to bring it to you. You should prepare before you bring. And then when you get there, you should say something different. That's it. So I this evening, about an hour ago, I wrote Mikudis, which I want to make sure I'm going to cover a little bit this later on. But after I wrote all this, this is enough here to keep me going for an hour or two, by the way. Then I realized I don't know where it's going to be held. So I went up to my emails, and I had this email from Rabbi Blooming. And in it, I saw two Nekudis, which was not included in here. So that's actually the unprepared, that's really the important part of it. Nekuda number one was a Meiser from the Ferdiger Rebbe, Bali Lula Yitzchak, in which he said, he asked somebody, what's your panosa? And the person says, Yitzchak is always after the Yitzchak. I have the same occupation as Hashem. I'm a Malami. State I'm a Lami, Toiro Lama Yisroel. And the Ferdiger Rebbe, Zerig Yifolim, the word. The Ferdiger Rebbe liked that word very much. So I just want to say, if I'm going to say one thing the whole tonight, one word, in Yitz Hashem, probably, it's going to all center on that bracha, but that's the end of the bracha. The first word in the bracha is V'harevno. V'harevno. We ask the Eibishter to make it ziz, to make it pleasant, to make it a positive experience. And that's the taisha where the Malamed is, and the Eibishter style to Vayochel, is that our job is, and the Kofishi is boy, but our real job, especially this generation, especially with the Super Bowl that was mentioned before, and all of these different things, in that generation, it's more essential than ever before that we see our role is to cultivate in our entire precious Talmidim the sense of a Haravna. That's one thing, and I'll come back to it. Mirz Hashem. The other thing that I saw there, it said that I asked Rabbi Blooming when he asked me to come over to Fabrein. It's very important to get questions. Because Mano Achra, the last few years, mostly when I'm Fabrein in yeshiva or in a seminary or with the school, whatever it is, but even with adults, got people to write in questions. I tell them anonymously, because sometimes they write, just in Florida, they were very sensitive questions. Boys, this was high school boys. And it gave me an opportunity to explain to them and to bring out to them subjects which, if I would have introduced it, I don't know if they would have been such a happy, such an appreciative audience of it. But like this, this person was asking, you know, he had guts, he was anonymous. And I took the bull by the horns, and I spoke about it, and it was very appreciated. I'm saying this b'chlal, in the class and in the school, sometimes it's a good idea. You don't always have to have all the answers, and it doesn't have to be perfect, but the person sees that you're grappling with ideas. So I asked Rabbi Blumenfeld, he wrote one question, that how can a teacher, in today's atmosphere, work atmosphere, where is there room? I'm paraphrasing, just tell me if I'm wrong, if I'm not getting it clear. There's so much paperwork that's involved. There's so much gashmiyazdik, there's so much administrative work that's required of educators in today's world, much, much more than there was 10, 20, 30 years ago. And then you have your own life, and your own ruchnistic life, and you have your family to come home to, and you have all kind of daigas of Bani Chaim is Oine de Vichin. And where can you find the room to be able to dedicate oneself to the Baharav Nod? This is the question. So in order to answer the question, I want to tell you three stories. And Bechlal, I'm going to tell you probably a lot of my style to tell the story, but when I tell the story, I choose. That story is told because it has an Nekudah which is very deep, and sometimes the Nekudah is kept, is protected, and is preserved, and is remembered, and is applied because of that. The story is about Rabbi Aaron Dov Sofer, Olav HaSholem. He was the director of education of the Moisés Chabad. He was there in London in the Moisés even before Rabbi Sudak was married, before Rabbi Sudak came there, Olav HaSholem. And he built up the schools, the Talmud Torah, the informal education, the Mitzvah Shabbos groups, the Tlagboyma parade, the camps, the day camps, that type of thing. He worked on that, overseeing the educational development. And he came to the Rebbe. His Yom Haledes is Chof Beis Ir. He came to the Rebbe for Shavuos, a couple of weeks after his 42nd birthday. It was Tavshin Lamed Beis. He came to the Rebbe, I wasn't even in England in Chof Beis. That's the Bach in 770. But he came in Tavshin, he came to the Rebbe in Tavshin Lamed Beis. He was a very capable and a very penimistic person, a very talented person, but also very bittledick and perfectionist, and the perfectionists sometimes have a hard time with life, you know. People are not perfectionists. You know, I heard once from Moshe Katsonis, from Moshe Katsonelimov. He said that Isha ain't also, you see, from Sora, the Isha ain't a Tzara, because she got everything, soilless. He said, Kamach, she took soilless. So Rav Moshe said that when a person comes to guests, he says, only the best, that has to be perfect, you're not going to have many guests. Because you're not going to be able to invite them, because you're going to feel worried it's not perfect. And he says, better sometimes to, you know, whatever. But anyway, he went to the Rebbe, and he said that he feels burnt out. And he feels he's already finished, you know, he had already been 15 years or whatever it was, or 12, 13 years in that job. And he felt he had to move to something less demanding. He was like, well, too much. He cannot do justice to this job anymore. He was just burnt out. So the Rebbe gave a big smile. And said, if you ever said Yiddish, I just became 70th birthday. And I undertook 71 new moizdis this year to build up. What I want you to do is to undertake 43 projects, now that you became 42, for the coming year. And if you say typical, that's what I'm going to do. And later when he asked the Rebbe, Settler, you know, clarification, exactly what it meant, and the moisters, there's a lot of it. It could be individuals, it could be family, it could be a moister. You give special attention, and he got himself a file, a suspension file, and he had 43 files. I still remember it, for each one, and he would check on each one and see what he's doing with it, and something like Duch to the Rebbe, and he did 43 things. That's story number one. Story number two was a Isha Kesheda, a Balas Tshuva, and there was a Leia Overlander. She was from California. She married Gershon and was an extremely successful shaliach Adi Yamazeh in London. He was a Baal Teshuva there as a student, a university student. And they worked hard, and they really built a lot. Never she passed away youngish. But she got married. She came from California, a very small family. Completely different lifestyle. When it came down to, you know, Ruchnius, but then it came down, she had one kid after the other. She had about five children at some stage. Five children. And they were under the age of six. And she didn't know if she's coming or going. She became supper time. Who's she giving the food to? What do you know? You're coming or going. She was American, you know, she went by the Rebbe Hudalis, and she said, I have a lot of children. I can't even know. I didn't know how to feed them. You know, it's whatever. And he never smiled, and he said, "You're going to have a lot of children, and you're going to be able to feed them." And she said later on, when she at one stage she had about 8 or 9 kids. She asked the oldest son who was with her at that. He's in Toronto, in Monash, Overland. Anyway, so. She asked him, "What do you think is a lot of kids?" He said 10. At the end, she had 10 kids. She had 10 kids. And the last one was left a little toddler when she passed away. Has very, very fine children. That's story number two. Story number three, I once heard from Rabbi Adin Evan Yisroel, Amahuna Steinsaltz from Yerushalayim. He's in England for some speaking engagement, and we were in the Balabas's house in Highgate in London, North London. The break was something. He told me the famous, and there was a time when they ever came out with a new miftah. And he told me the following. There's a very famous old, everyone knows, the old Jewish joke about the man who comes to the Rav, and he says it's so pressurized in his house. He can't take it. The Rav is taking the chickens. And he comes back a day later, he says, even worse, he says, taking the goat, worse, taking the cow. He says, Rob, it's worse than ever. You know what? Take out the cow and the goat and the chickens. He takes it out and he tells the Rob, Samachaya, yes. So he said, the Rebbe is like that Rob. It's always another one, but he never takes it out, he said. That's the difference. So if I saw, he said, "What's the solution?" This is before the Ma'aser Eighties often. He says, "What's the solution?" It's more and more coming. He said, "The Rebbe expands our capacity. He shows us how you really have the possibility and the capability, and you can do more than you think you can do." And that's really the answer, like, you know, all the questions. I know we have this also, paperwork. And today, the government, we are now a government-recognized school, so it's even more, like the government-funded schools, even more than some are recognized. But we have to have a very expensive management system, and then every single kid a tracking mechanism, exactly where they're holding on every single, and today's schools are classified on the tables of where the schools are holding, and a thing called progress, not what the kid learned, but how much progress they made. And in order to do that, you have to follow every single kid. It's important. And Lahavdil, since it's being done in the secular, so we're using the same facility, and it's happening in the Kodesh too, and I look at the thing, it's really, chinuch-wise, it takes a lot of time and energy from a teacher. But when you do that type of thing, like a teacher who's teaching a career to children, and he knows exactly where the strengths and the weaknesses, they have these little charts with the red and the yellow and the green, where they're very good, where they, you know, a little bit slower, where they need special improvement, and you're able to track it, and you're able to do what we're supposed to be doing, which is to help a kid. And by the way, a child, I once was at a conference, not from Chabad, but it was some Jewish people from America, and they came to England for head teachers, and they were talking about various problems that, it's maybe 15 years ago already. problems that arise, but they said that a disproportionate, I don't remember the number, it might have been the overwhelming majority of kids who go off the derech, Rahman al-Slav, who have different types of problems, they have problems reading or in certain basics along the line, those kids are lacking. And therefore they feel alienated from the whole thing. So I would just say that when you feel that this all this paperwork, in my sense, it is a drag and it is a big bother, but I think we should appreciate that it helps in the chinuch. It's part of the chinuch of the kid. It's part of the chinuch of the kid is being able to have it. And if you look in the Klal HaChinuch LaHadracha, one of the rules, and it's summarized in Perik Yudalit, is that the teacher knows where the kid is at. The kid respects that in itself. That makes them more pliant. That makes them more better if they realize that the teacher is aware of exactly where they are, what their matzav is. So this paperwork has a reason. I happen to find time for everything else. The Rebbe gives koyches. It expands the capacity, and the person will find a way. I was really going to start. It wasn't what I was going to start, but I added it later on to what I was really going to start with. So I'll start with the thing I added, and then I'll come to what I'm going to start with. What I added was a story which Reb Mendel Futterfass, it happened in Lubavitch. It's a story which is relevant to Yud Shvat. Probably most of you know the story, but I'm going to repeat it anyway, because of the punchline. The punchline is from Reb Mendel, his reaction to this story, which was told over by a chassid, by Reb Avram Zaltzman. He came to Tomchet Mimin, it's almost 100 years ago. He was only about 12 years old, maybe 13. They had young kids in yeshiva also. And they couldn't take that pressure, but with the learning, with the age, it was whatever it was. There were three boys like this, and what the yeshiva did was they gave them jobs like today. If a kid is, you see a kid is hyperactive, you make him into the Kenyan Sfarim, he's the monitor, you give him a job, and that it gives an outlet for their energy. So they did that in Lubavitch 100 years ago. These boys were there, and when they had to go, to the farm to watch the milking, they had to do this, they had to do that. They were doing this type of thing. So one day, for whatever reason, these kids got bored, and they took the goat from the farm, and they took a bottle of mashke, along with Trunken, they gave the goat to drink a lot of mashke. And they took the goat, and they put it right at the entrance to the Zal, to the yeshiva in Lubavitch. So for sake, the goat jumped into the yeshiva with what it was out of its mind, whatever mind the goat has. And was jumping on the table and knocked down Sfarim onto the floor, and there was a balagan shake of mind that it took an hour and a half, 2 hours, just to clear up and to get back everything to come back into Seder in the yeshiva. The Menahel Poel with the Friedrich Rebbe was Bechlal known as a very, very strict Menahel Poel. And he called them in, and he expelled these three boys. So what they do? They went and they packed their bags, and they went to Rudnir. The Rudnir must be about 10 miles from, I don't know how far it is, you know. That's the nearest place, which is a train station. There were no trains in Lubavitch. They went there, and Avram Zaltzman was one of the three boys. He's telling over the story in Eretz Yisrael. Like, it's 50 years later, 70 years later. He's in an Elder Apostle. He said they were at the station, they're waiting for the train, and suddenly he says to the guys, we shouldn't take this lying down. Let's try to fight this. Let's see if we can, you know, get this overturned. This Gzardin. So the S said, you know how strict he is. You know you're not going to get back in. It's not worth it. He sat around trying to persuade them. And the end is, by the time the train came, one of those two bachim got on the train, but one of them he already longed to follow. He was a follower, but he went with Rebbe Rav, see what we can do. So they went back to Lubavitch. Whatever he did overnight, he figured like this. To go to the Rayats, the Nahal Poyel, he was so upset with them, and that was his job, and the whole yeshiva, and the whole discipline. To go to the Rebbe, how could they get access to the Rebbe? Their shop. So they decided they're going to go. This Ram Zaltman, that gave here, go to the Rebbe Tzin Rivka, the mother of the Rebbe Rashab, Balas Yortzeit of Yitzchva. She was like the camp mother. She was like she saw them in need, and she gave them this. She was like a person that's accessible, you know, physically and emotionally accessible to the kids. So they went to her, and they wanted her to intervene with the Rebbe Rashab and get him to speak to the Friedrich Rebbe and to get them back into the yeshiva. So they went to her, and Rebbe Tzin Rivka validated what they said, and she gave them a lot of sympathy and a lot of gefil, and I'm with you on the same page, and you have to do something. But she said that she cannot tell the Rebbe. This is not a thing. She cannot go and tell her son, who's the Rebbe, what to do and mix into the thing. But what she said is, I want you to know that every morning at 10 o'clock, he's in this room, you know, in a certain room, and maybe he came to visit his mother, or maybe that was his own apartment. I don't know what it was. He's here at 10 o'clock in the morning, and what I can do is I'll let him in at that time. If you're here at 10 o'clock to go, and you can see what you can achieve with him. So the next morning, obviously they were there at the start of 10, and the door was like a little bit open, and the Rebbe said, you just knock on the door and you go in and say what you want. And so Avram Zaltzman knocked on the door. When the other bacher got cold feet, he was pushing scared to go in. And Avram Zaltzman was this 12-year-old kid, and he like was crying. And the Rebbe smiled slightly, the Rebbe Rashab, and he said, "Was willst du?" He knocked on the door. He said, "Come on, was willst du?" He said, "Ich will lernen in the yeshiva now. I want to learn yeshiva here." So the Rashab said, "Why do you have to learn yeshiva here? There's 20 yeshivas in the country. You know, there's a yeshiva in Slabotka, the yeshiva in Panovichvet, or whatever cities there were. You start naming the different cities. There are other yeshivas you can go to. You're not left without a yeshiva." So he starts by saying, "We're learning the Babbage." So he starts, right, the Rashab starts to laugh harder. The Rebbe starts to laugh harder, he starts to cry harder. And the Rashab was laughing very strong. And but he said, "Phil, I'm desperate to learn in Lubavitch with the Moy Sholish." So the Rebbe said to him, "I'll see what I can do. Come back in a few hours." That's what he said. So he's by the Rebbe in Yechiris. You don't walk out with your back to the Rebbe. So he started to walk back to the door, and suddenly he remembered his friend. So he walked forward two steps, and he says, "Oh," so the Rebbe said, "What's noch?" He said, "Chava chavre," and he's in the same position, and I want to ask for him also. So the Rebbe Nishmoy Satan said, "He should also come back in a couple of hours. I'll see what I can do for him also, and let him also come back in a few hours." They came back a few hours later, and the Rebbe Rashab had told them, "Go to my son, you know, we have an arrangement." They went, they got a knas, they got a big heavy knas that had learned to 10 block tomorrow. I don't know what they had to do. They had to do something. Lefi had to come, but you know, a hard job. And the Rebbe Rayat the Balai Yilula of Yitzchak, accepted them back in the yeshiva. And here he was telling the story in Chabad, or Nachlas HaChabad, you know, 70 years later. And he's, the point he was bringing out to the young Hasidim in Eretz Yisrael, the point of the story is, he says, your dedication for Chassidus, your motivation for Chassidus has to be pnimis ha-nefesh. He said, I got back in because I cried. I cared enough to cry and to really, really want to do that. Really, I'm a tshuva. And that can teach you how you should feel for Chassidus. And Reb Mendel, and it's totally typical of Reb Mendel, by the way. It's consistent until the last time I spoke to him a few weeks before he passed away. And the same theme. And when Mendel said, you're making a mistake. He said, what? So after such a story, he said, the reason you accepted back is because you asked for your friend also, because of Avos Yisroel. That's the nekuda of it all. And the Mendel, you kocht sich always, and that says against a kodesh, k'machshevas avoyde zora mamash, even a machshev against someone else. So that's the story I'm going to start with. There's a chus to be. I was once asked for the Kinnas HaShluchim, they asked me to give a talk, a workshop, on the zuchus of the shlichus of chinuch. Part of the Knesset HaShluchim is Melamdim from all over the world. They come there. I don't know if the Melamdim here go to the Knesset HaLami, but you have your own kinnus, including this very Mabrengen now. So I had to go and find something to say. So my first port of call, my first stop was, I took the Igris and Chelek Chof, which is the Mafteach HaKloli of the first 20 volumes. And I went to look up where the Rebbe speaking about Chinuch, and now I'm going to start finding things. And as I sat there, I remember where I was sitting there in Lubavitch House downstairs, and I looked at the Mafteach of Chinuch, and I saw it was massive. The Mafteach itself, it had little apprentices. What in Kudu, it's a segula for this, it's a segula for that, how you do this, what do you do in this situation? And I counted the columns that you won on the Erech of Chinuch. On the Inyan of Chinuch, how many columns of references, I'm not talking about any letter, before I looked at a single letter, just looked at that Erech. And then I counted how many columns there were for Torah, Tefillah, Tshuva, Moshiach, Geula, Alter Rebbe. And the way it looked to me at that time, since then I've seen it more nuanced, but it was more than any other Erech in the whole Igris. There were more columns of references. That means that the Rebbe's letters are referring to Yonim of Chinuch more than to anything else. I also have Bichlal out of Kaviyas every single Lean Neda every day since Gimel Tamuz, Toshim Mundalit. I learn a few pages for Kesedek from the beginning, going up now third time around in the Chelek Chav Beis. Go and just read a few pages every single day. And when I travel, I photocopy the next 20, 30 pages, whatever. And so I found many, many times expression that's hardly there on any other field that ever calls chinuch chelek hayofa of shlichus. Chelek hayofa, the choicest, the choice portion, the best. There's nothing better than chinuch. There's nothing better than chinuch. That's what chelek hayofa means, the best. That is, I don't know how many times, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's 20 times over the volumes of the Igris. Just that exact, probably more than 20 times. And then there's a letter to Rabbi Shlame Zolzangiton, I think he's in Eretz Yisrael now. He was the principal of the Beit Rivka Seminary in Yerch, outside Paris, in France. And the Rebbe writes to him, not about anything, it's a letter he didn't write to the Rebbe. I think it's Mitzvah Eila, the whole letter. And the Rebbe says, I was surprised to hear that you had a Kosal Kedaitach. He didn't do it. But he had a svara to respond to an invitation to become a Rav of a community. Become a Rav of a community is a big thing. A Rav of a community means you're like a parent. You have all ages. You see them through, you know, it's not just like a teacher has them for 1 year. There are so many milers and so many opportunities. There's such a potential if you're a Rav in a community. And the Rebbe says, I was surprised that you should even have a course, that you should consider it as a possibility when you're working in the chinuch. He says, you know what the matzav of Rabbanus of today is, Rebbe writes, and you're in the chelek hayofa, you're in part in the chinuch of the next generation. There's no bigger zuchus in the world. There's no bigger zuchus. I thank the Eibishter whenever I think into it. That Baruch Hashem, over 50 years in England, and mainly my work is with young people, the families of young people, that type of thing. It's the biggest. So you are there, you are partially creating things. It's the hardest in one way. Most difficult because, mostly, you don't get a Baruch Hashem from the kids. You get, very often they complain or they blame, or they just accept. They take for granted. It looks like that. It's not that. It's just that they're kids. They haven't developed it yet. Sometimes it's years later they say, boy, I got something from you. I didn't realize until I had kids myself. Or things like that. So they come back to you. And that's VMO. I once got a letter, an email, a whole story of somebody came to our school. Not from London, and then they needed whatever it was, and I realized that they needed more than that. They needed professional help, and I got someone. And whatever it was thousands of dollars worth probably. And that person either took the money or didn't, or said it's my tzedakah. It doesn't make a difference, but it helped them. Then about 2 years later, that Talmid sent me an email. I thank you very much for introducing me to so-and-so and kept me in my life. And the person's married. Things are like gestalt and love. And I sent that email, I forwarded it to the professional. And the professional wrote back to me a very special HaKadosh HaTov to you for forwarding that to me. Because in this work, I'm sure it's not only by yours, not only by Fumuhin or anything. In this work, it's very rare that anyone would acknowledge it, even though you help them. They're not against you or anything, but that's the Teva Ha'olam. That's the Teva Ha'olam. It has to do with parents as well. To show a course, I refer to a parent. It's such a big mitzvah, because sometimes you take it for granted. So you're in a field where you are shaping the next generation. It's a zechus neflo, the chelek ha'yofa. In the time when the Rebbe was building, it's hard to believe that there was a time when people didn't want to go on shlichus, or didn't, I don't say they refused, but they certainly didn't run for it. And their parents, when the Rebbe wanted the parents to be maskim, their parents were chassidim shiyidim. Yes, generations. And the Rebbe argued with Kibay Yochel, and spoke with them, and the sichus to see it, and it was in Yechidus, and there's a lot of stories I know with names. The whole idea that you find people running a problem, too many people coming into a town, a mushroom, this one, that one, all the different chambers and endorphins that you have today. It's from the unbelievable success of shlichus. Even if it's a problem, it comes because the Rebbe created, the whole Indian. He didn't just recruit. He created the whole field. And at that time, the Rebbe is getting people to go on shlichus. People are reluctant. And you're talking Chassidish Yidden, some of them were already in prison, where they certainly were living under communist Russia, and they came out, and all they wanted was just to have to catch their breath, and the Rebbe gave them shlichus to go to countries where they spoke French and Arabic and all these different places. The first shlichus was in Morocco. If you think about the whole thing. And this was in the time when everyone saw how the Rebbe loved it, and he spoke the Sicha of Yitzvat, Tovshin Chof, Nas Ho'eser. When the Rebbe spoke about the Peace Corps, the President of the United States then was President JFK, John F. Kennedy. And he started a thing called Peace Corps, that people who come from rich, good countries, affluent circumstances, should go give time in the third world. And the Rebbe spoke a whole sikh about it, that I'm speaking about it for 10 years. It's one of the big sikhs. So in that tkufa, a couple of years after then, I used to learn with Pinyakov. He's older than I am. Older than I am. But he was a bacha. He's older than I am. But we were, he was an older bacha, and I was a little a newcomer in Montreal, and I loved him very much. He's a very special, real McCoy. So he told me at that time, and we used to learn, he was teaching Holy Torah. It was, in Holy Torah, it was a little building upstairs, not when they had the center, near the center. It was like a Tama building there. So, and he had a sit-in, Mashgiach, over the kids, you know, they were, he was teaching to 11-year-old boys, Yossi Weitzes, these other guys were there. So those were the kids in the class, that generation, by Kofshuch of Dalek, approximately. And we used to learn. So he told me once that he wrote to the Rebbe, and he wanted very much to shlichus. By the way, he moved out to Maple Street or somewhere. He moved somewhere, even in Crown Heights. He wanted to go to a place where he'll make a difference. He couldn't speak a word of English. He wanted to go and make a difference. But he wrote to the Rebbe that he wants shlichus. And the Rebbe wrote him back a tzettel, V'harei b'mersha oisik ato hu gam kein shlichus. What you're doing now is also shlichus. U'melvad she'yia b'mesira u'nesina. Provided you do it with proper dedication, and that year, Erev Pesach, when the Rebbe gave up matzah, the Rebbe would give, in those days, the Rebbe would give a whole matzah to Shluchim. The Rebbe gave him a whole matzah. So, it's important, first and foremost, to know to the chus nifloa of being a melamed. It's not just a job. And it's not just a shlichus. It's a chelek ha-yofer. And it's dealing with the most tired thing that exists in the world, which is the next generation, the Rebbe generation, Mashiach generation. This, you're preparing, you're changing the world. You're changing the world. So l'chaim. I can go on for 3 hours. I'm happy to talk. But keep talking. Okay. Yeah, you know what happened? One of the heads of the Moses is here in Crown Heights. I was here for the Kinnis HaShulchan about 2-3 years ago. And he asked me to come. It was Rosh Chodesh Kislev for bringing it to the school. It was the Sunday. Sunday was Rosh Chodesh Kislev. I think it was 2.5 years ago. 2 years ago. Yeah, I said it's the banquet Hakodesh. I said, okay, you live. I don't remember what he said. So I said to him, it really wasn't a big job for me. Really, it's just it's a change of schedule a little bit. But you get a little bit fixed in your ways, and you become like a Englishman or something, like a Balabesala. But so I told him, I said, you know what? If you get, I'm going to spend with them, you get them to write anonymous questions, whatever they want. These are 14, 15-year-old kids of this neighborhood. You get them to write anonymous questions, and I have to blame with them. And I was written for 2 hours. Well, we made up 12, so wait, two, whatever it was, in a way that I can get to the banquet. And I went in, and he had, I still have those questions. I put them in, I saved them. He came with about 20, 30 questions these kids had. Some of them were very Hasidic questions, and some of them were anything but. Really, really, I'm talking about, you know, not as much as I wanted, but you know, I want to hear what they really want to say. That's why I say it's anonymous. So let me do it. And so I told them, sing a niggun. I told the kids, that's the truth, he's talking about a niggun. I said, sing a niggun. And meanwhile, I took these 30 questions and I put them into 4 or 5 categories, sort of like how I'll answer these, you know, these on what type of issue, why this happens in the school, what, you know, complaining about different things in the school. Other ones were about various in which they're not supposed to be involved in, and that maybe they wanted to or where they were. Other things were, you know, questions, how can I learn more chassidus, or how can I overcome kids who make fun of me because I'm more chassidus, whatever, that type, like different types of, some were personal questions, my relationship with the family, and his brother, they're fighting, they're not talking, whatever, this type of thing. And I went on for 1 hour, non-stop, two questions, half the questions. And then I said to the guy, suddenly I realized about an hour. So I said to the kids, the principal, they didn't mix it up. He just sat there on the side. I was walking up and down, you know, Kadaki when I do this kind of thing. And I said to the kids, I said, too much. Should I break for a niggun now? You know, let's have a break. They said, no, continue. It was being terrible. And went for 2 hours straight, non-stop. And he told me it is never, ever for brain. They don't go out in the middle. They don't fall asleep in the middle. He said they were in. You know, because they were talking. Even though they didn't say anything. But you were taking what they wanted to ask into consideration. You don't compromise what you're saying to them. But they hear that somebody is listening to what they're saying. Anyway, I'm thinking. That's what it really is. You guys have seen it all. The hardest audience to talk to is Lubavitchers. It's Malamdim. They push it. Malamdim are the most brilliant people. They got it the whole day. You have to contend with. There's a reason why the Din Shulchan Aruch that a Malamid is not allowed to Mimasagiv as Atzmai. Bachila and Bashina, he has to sleep, he has to eat. There's a reason. Because you got to be all there. Be all there. But the mile is that it keeps you young. Or it kills you.
Thank you. So he says in the 50s, in Bet Furandim, he says, I was a very shvacha bochen. And when I came 16, I was advised to go work. So they told me to go to the Rebbe and ask who you should work in.
Ask the Rebbe what
you should do in business. It's 50 years ago. So he says, I came to the Rebbe and I asked the Yechidus. The first and only time they went to Yechidus, he died. He didn't know since 75. He thinks. But anyway, he said that the Rebbe opened up a sefer in front of the Sforum. The Rebbe said, this is a printing press. He said, I'm a printing press. Go on to printing. He says, I'm printing till today. Asked me, give any options to the Rebbe? No, nothing. The Rebbe's told me, go on to printing till today, I'm printing. He says, one thing. He says, I was a shvacha boy, and my mother came to Rabbi Tenenbaum and asked me how I'm doing. So Rabbi Tenenbaum said, as mera veler viakenen. And he tells me, so you see, today I already finished Shas 5 times. So, Merabella Viakanen.
Did you get his name? What's his name?
Somebody, Simmer. What's on the name printing? Simmer.
The Indian, the Indian. I'll tell you a story. She also heard recently, but not today, I heard this story by Kenneth Ashluchan, not from Ashluchan, I want to hear from Kenneth Ashluchan. But did he have a Udo from a younger man who's in Crown Heights? Higher teaching man, not, you know, not especially in him. he was in yeshiva. I don't want to go into, I don't want to say the exact details because of different personalities, different things over here. There's nothing bad about anybody here, by the way. But so I'm going to just make up that his name was Reb Chaim, and he was in Los Angeles. Even though at the time when he's talking about there was no yeshiva in Los Angeles. Well, this goes back, the story goes back 50 years ago, Mr. Moore, 50, 60 years ago. I don't know what you're talking about. I was pouring with rain here. I had to go speak in the seminary, Beis Rivka, on Crown Street. And somehow I saw him and he gave me a ride, gave me a lift. My umbrella wouldn't have helped. It was winds and rains. And then we stopped outside. He said, I want to tell you a story. I don't know why. But I think maybe and you just reminded me of this when you said the story about the guy who went into printing. Avella Vishnikana. There was a boy who came from a Rahman al-Utslan, a dysfunctional family, split family. And probably, it wasn't just they were divorced, but there was also probably religious rift over there, and it was a chaotic situation. And they knew someone there in Los Angeles or wherever it was. And they sent him there. The kid was about maybe 9-10 years old, I get the impression. And this Chaim was about 3 years older. He was, let's say, 13 years old. And somehow he became, or he was appointed, or it was suggested, but he was Bapoyo, became the mentor of this boy who was 3 years younger than him. He would learn with him, and maybe every evening for 15 minutes to go over his learning, or once a week, whatever it was, and they developed a relationship. And this kid was away from home. You know, it's not an easy thing. As bad as it is, it's home. And so went on a few years, and the kid was then about 13, 14, had a bar mitzvah, and he still kept on learning with him. And at some stage, he became aware, I don't want to say how he became aware, but the older bracha became aware, the Chaim became aware that this boy was planning to do what he can to leave the yeshiva, go back to his hometown, and go to a Jewish school, which is not so Haredi, let's say. And he turned this discussion with this bacha, with this boy, to the topic, and he told him, and he said, look, on one hand, I know how good it is here, all right. On the other hand, I'm torn. So he told the bacha, my advice to you, this older bacha, the 16, 17, telling the 13, 14, my advice is, ask the Rebbe. But with one condition. You have to be ready to do whatever the Rebbe says. When you ask the Rebbe, there's no such thing as nishfolgen. If you're not sure you're ready to fall, don't ask. That's all. He doesn't know Ada Yemazem, Toshanayin Zion told me the story. He doesn't know if the guy wrote or not, but it looks like maybe he did. And maybe didn't get a direct answer. However, the next time he was in New York for Yom HaDepagra, for maybe Yitzhakir went in, or maybe it was Yom Tiv, maybe it was Tishrei. Whenever he was in New York the next time, he went into Yechidus because it was near his Yom HaLevis. He used to go in for your Yom HaLevis if you lived in New York. You lived somewhere else. I was learning in Montreal for 4 years. I used to go in Yitzhak. That was my Yechidus. Because my Yom HaLevis is in order. So, next time he went into Yechidus, out of the blue, he said, Rusa de la'eva, the Rebbe said to him, you know that boy that in the yeshiva there mentioned this kid that he was like mentoring. Obviously, the Rebbe must have known he was mentoring him too. The Rebbe said, you know that boy? He says, yeah. The Rebbe said, I want you to go to his principal in the high school. And tell the principal that he should call the boy in and tell him that they're trying to build up the reputation of the yeshiva, and the way to do it is by they want to attract mitzuyonim, they want to attract good boys. And he's the type of a boy they want to attract. And therefore, he asks him to please stay in the yeshiva, so it will help the yeshiva in their work of bringing other people in. They went to the principal, and he told the principal what they never told him.
It's the same yeshiva, the original yeshiva he wanted to leave.
Yeah, in Los Angeles, I called. It was, yeah. Well, they didn't have a yeshiva then. But he was telling, he went to the principal high school in L.A., and he said, the Rebbe Tzereshah, you call him Yankala, Hatzkala, whatever his name is, and tell him that we're trying to attract people from out of town, like you, and we'd very much you should stay, because it'll help us like to build up the yeshiva. They went and he said that to the principal. The principal said, I never saw him as particularly a Mitzrayan. You know, I'm not a bad kid, but I didn't see him as a Mitzrayan. So the Chaim tells me, he told the principal, he says, I don't know what he was. I'm here to assess the boy. I'm telling you a message from the Rebbe. That's what I'm doing. He gave him the message. Presumably, the principal must have done was Mutum Gehesen. He didn't check it up. He was himself 6, 17, 18. He wasn't going to start asking, did you do it already? How did you do it? How did it work? He didn't do that. But that boy stayed. He went to get smicha and was in Koilu and became a very prominent rov. Prominent rov. That's why I don't want to go into too many details. A very prominent person. That bracha, that boy himself told over the story himself. At a Fabrengen once, and it's a chutzaveit. And he told, he just, he was in, you know, the Fabrengen together with this other one, somehow, out of the blue, he once told it, but that's not to me to, it's not Negeya. And I don't know why he told it to me. I told you the whole background. It was a pouring day. The guy gave me a ride. I really wanted to get out of that car, because I had, the first rule in school is to be there a half hour early. We spoke about it before when we had about four guys here from my room. So, the first rule is to get there. So somebody, I said, what's the first rule? They said, to get on time. I said, no. The first rule is that when the kids come, you're there already. You don't come with the first kid. When the kid comes, you're already settled in there. You've already written on the board something. You're sitting there. You've had your tea already. You're all ready to welcome them. Relax. It's very, very hard that time in the morning. But it's a golden investment. A golden investment. So here's me coming to talk. Mrs. Garowitz, probably, Ramora Garowitz, I think, was probably called me up to come and speak to the seminary. Two classes, one 9:30 to 10, 10:30 to 11, whatever it was. I was leaving, I think, that day back to England, pouring with rain. The guy gave me a ride. I was happy. I wanted to jump out of that car, run in, get there on time. I probably got, maybe I got whatever it was. But I heard the story, and I realized that the Abish is telling me the story now. You know, this is, and what I did was, the first class that I spoke to in the seminary, I told the story. It was kids who are specifically, the two groups in the seminary. One group who are specifically have a curriculum which is geared towards becoming teachers. And the other ones have teaching as just like a part of it, but it's not the center of it. I told them, I tell the story, that the first and foremost thing, what we saw from the Rebbe, is to see the tayakite, to see the kenna that's there in that person, to bring it out. To bring out the good in that person. You could have told that boy, you know something, I know a bit about life. You go back home, you'll be caught, you'll be a football between two teams. You'll be part of a fight. You'll be fatrosin, you'll have frustration every day. You'll live with anxiety, with negativity. And they're looking after you over here. You have a meal, you have everything, you're learning. That's one way you can do it. And then there's another way, which is, this is good for you. Not because it's going to prevent something else. This is the best life for you. The whole idea of motivation is today the biggest thing in the world. It was always big. It was always big. But today's world, it's everything. It's everything today. Because the kids have access to all sorts of things. No matter how perfect your control of what the kid is exposed to, and I don't mean in a community like ours where you know it's not, but you go anywhere, I don't care where it is, in one of these upstate, and you go to Fallsburg, or where they have like, they have no contact with anybody, that doesn't exist in today's world. And if Papoil it's not, which is unlikely, but there's an infiltration, it's an atmosphere, it's an avira. We have to try to protect our children as late as possible and as little as possible. But ultimately, the deepest and the strongest thing that will happen is when a child wants what he's doing, he loves it. If he sees that we love it and he loves it, he sees we love him and we care about it, then that's the best chance. Not only the best chance, it's certain to win. Somebody, a parent once asked me, it was maybe 20, the kids are already adults, you know, Mamelschein. So this is years and years, I'm 41 years in that school, principal.